When a bunch of unruly English tourists wreaked havoc around New Zealand Aotearoa back in 2019, the general director of the New Zealand Opera, Thomas de Mallet Burgess, thought, well, it was ripe for a bit of operatic staging. But when New Zealand Opera announced the Unruly Tourists production, it was met with controversy. And a third of the board resigned in apparent protest against the company's new artistic direction, although this may have just been the last straw for them. But de Mallet Burgess is undeterred. He has headed unconventional productions around the globe before and says if opera is going to remain relevant, then this is what must be done with it. And he's with me now. Kia ora.
Kia ora, good morning.
How, where, when, and how is it going to, I know COVID's derailed things, when are we likely to see this production?
So this new work will premiere at Auckland Arts Festival, all being well, in March next year.
All right. And did you read about, hear about the stories? And they were fairly dramatic. I mean, they were, you know, they trashed Takapuna Beach and they were linked to thefts and scams and threats of violence and they were deported or left. I'm not quite sure what happened to most of them. Did you hear about all that and think, oh my goodness, this needs to be operatized?
I arrived in New Zealand at a similar time, and so I was, as an outsider, getting to know the country, and this unfolded really in the early days of my time here in New Zealand. And one of the things that caught my attention first was the fact that they were labeled the Irish tourists. And coming originally from the UK, I know that this particular group of people who belong to the traveller community, Whakapapa, back to Ireland, but to all intents and purposes are from England. And when this was pointed out, instead of becoming the English tourists, they became the unruly tourists. And that seemed strange to me. And I wondered whether that was to do with the way in which New Zealand saw itself in relation to England, and started to contrast that with the where I had come from, which was Western Australia, where I think possibly the relationship is a little bit different. So,
do you think in Australia they would have been called the English tourists?
Quite possibly. I'm not sure. It didn't happen there, of course. It happened here. But it struck me that if this was not the first time that a group of people from England had come to New Zealand and gone about the country, laying waste to it. So what was the connection there with what was happening in the present and what was happening in the past? And would that suit a music drama?
So you're talking about the shade of colonialism overhanging at least the coverage and the reaction to this?
Right, so one theme running through it is colonization, and we're living with that at the moment as a global dialogue, particularly through Black Lives Matter. So that's one strand. The other strand, of course, is around the media and communication, because the media seized on them and their antics, and started sort of posting, creating a whole world where people were, I suppose, in a way, encouraged to spot them and put it on Facebook. And,
yes.
And so in a way, they themselves, whilst behaving incredibly badly, also ended up being pursued by the media and people of New Zealand. And so there are strands there about the way in which our media and our communication is going in this age of the digital and social media.
We do love a villain, don't we?
Yes, villains are very important, and opera is full of villains, of course.
But unambiguous villains are particularly pleasing. I mean, often, you know, you get a villain, then somebody comes along and says, Yeah, but you have to understand they had a very sad childhood. But, you know, the unruly tourists were really nasty and we didn't like them and there were no redeeming features about them.
Well, they certainly left a mess and they caused havoc. But at the same time, there was an equal and opposite reaction here. And I think it's the tension between those two things that it's interesting.
What do you mean, an equal and opposite reaction?
Well, in terms of the way in which they were pursued.
I see. Us behave badly.
Well, in a way, yes. And then, to some extent, when this production was announced, we had a kind of similar piling in a way. I think that this is reflective of some of the communication that's happening at the moment.
Maybe that's why we like villains, because villains give us license to behave in a way that would otherwise be bad.
Quite possibly, and I think the way that Libby and Amanda, Libby Rehana and Amanda Kennedy have written this in a way, there's a sense in which there's satire on everyone in this piece. Everyone is looked at through their acerbic and satirical lens. But look, I mean, I think one of the important things to say about all of this is that for us at New Zealand Opera, this is a hugely challenging time at the moment. But we are also challenging the existing paradigm and experimenting, seeing what will resonate, seeing what will invigorate, and new works, of which this is one, are one way to do that. Not only to tell our stories and to think through our stories and what they might mean for us now, but also, of course, producing, commissioning, and supporting other new works. And we're doing that at a faster rate than we've ever done in our 20-year history.
There are people. I mean, I haven't spoken to Whitty Meyer about this particular issue. He was one of the three board members who resigned in May. But there are people who say opera is of its time. You can't have a modern Renaissance painting, and you can't really have a modern opera. What do you say to that?
Well, look, if we look at the top 10 operas that are performed around the world, the most recent of those is La Bohème, which premiered in 1896. So it's not an unreasonable question to say, how do we link opera's most canonical works and to our modern-day audience? And in fact, I would say that the rise of the director in opera as a central figure has been in part due to the need to rescue opera, if you like, from a cul-de-sac, find ways of staging work that explores its relevancy. And in fact, not everyone agrees with the prominence of the director's role. There's actually a Facebook page with over 15,000 people subscribed to it that is against modern opera production. So,
on the grounds of
on the grounds that the director gets in the way of the purity of intent in the original art form.
So they see a director as somebody who tries to mess around with the original.
Yeah, I mean, now that's the feeling, that's the sentiment, I think, from many of the comments on that.
We've just been talking about the originalists in America interpreting the Constitution in the way in which it was written at their time. So you're talking about originalist opera aficionados.
Yes, I mean, we love our audience who are already invested in opera, and we put on main scale productions of canonical works and concerts and recitals and things that we know they love. But opera needs to find new audiences. We need to find new audiences. We need to find ways of telling our own stories rather than necessarily always shoehorning an old work into a modern framework. And the only way in which we can do that, I think, is through reimagining the art form, either the way in which it's presented or the work itself that we commission.
So what operas would you put on the far, far back burner at the moment that people regard as staples?
Well, that's an interesting question because, I'm someone who believes that opera has always been at the centre of political, social and cultural change. I mean, if we look at Verdi's operas, for example, they're intimately connected with the cause of Italian nationalism. And more recently, for example, Jake Heggie's work, Dead Man Walking, looks at the intersection between love and forgiveness and the death penalty and redemption in quite a challenging way. But if we look at other operas, we could see, for example, Chinese Stereotypes in Puccini's Turandot, a pretty lightly veiled anti-Semitism in Wagner's Ring Cycle. There are caricatures of Muslims in Mozart's The Abduction from the Seraglio. So some of these things can be taken by directors and turned around and create enabling us to perhaps have a dialogue around the present and the past, what is acceptable, what was acceptable and is no longer. But my main reason for wanting to just put some works in the drawer is actually not so much political, but more that I think it's wonderful to be able to let things go for a while and have a different generation take them out and rediscover them, rather than each generation feeling it needs to carry the baggage from the past 200 years forward into the present.
So what baggage do you feel you've had to carry?
I think the role of women in opera, what happens to them, and how that works. Our recent production of The Marriage of Figaro, which I actually see as quite as an opera in which women drive the plot. One of the ways in which we explored that was employing a director, Lindy Hume, whose artistic practice intersects with feminism, and creating a team of women around her to explore specifically that theme in the work. And it was hugely successful and resonated, actually, with the audience. I mean, Marriage of Figaro sold out in Auckland and Wellington, although postponed, and very nearly sold out in Christchurch, and created a dialogue, really, about the role of women in that opera and the way the production treated that. So that sort of dialogue, I think, is really welcome. And sometimes that's better discovered when something disappears for a while and then comes back with a new generation looking at it.
So it's odd, really, because I can't think of many operas that would be... They're like fairy tales. You know, often the gender politics are appalling. How much can you change?
So sometimes a director will be able to provide insights, and especially if they're working really closely with the conductor so that the music and the drama are intertwined, they will find new ways of revealing it, revealing the subjects and the themes. Composers who have been handed down to us often have the most amazing insights into the human condition. And one of the exciting things is the way in which those insights are communicated, both through text and through music. But there are other works where it is far more difficult to, as I say, to shoehorn or to change the way in which a work is presented, sometimes simply because the text is awkward, and there can be challenges in changing the text and how that then impacts on the music. And also sometimes the historical connotation is lost. For example, the character of Monostatos in The Magic Flute is described in German as schwarz, black. Now, the fact that the emphasis was on black of heart as opposed to black of face may be lost when audience read that surtitle translated literally, for example.
You've described the story of the unruly tourist as Shakespearean. Which bit of Shakespeare are you thinking of?
Well, it was the way the term unruly, which seems to me, it felt...
It's quite an archaic word, isn't it?
Yes. I mean, it makes me think of Hamlet and the lawless resolutes and phrases such as that, which are wonderful, but that we don't really hear very often now. And of course, it has you were talking earlier about villains, but there is an epic quality to to that, the story of what happened here, the fact that people arrive with an ambition to see the hobbits and end up running amok across the country and then being pursued and then deported.
Yes, somebody has texted to say, for heaven's sake, we in Australia, we in... I'm just... because somebody else is talking about Australia and I've conflated the two texts. It's quite simple. We in New Zealand simply don't put up with bad behaviour or treating others badly. This artistic director is overthinking everything. So that's quite simple. I don't know where, it's from somebody called Mark. I don't quite know where he's been living, but apparently we never put up with bad behaviour and we never treat others badly. What do you make of that? We are paradise.
I have to say, I think the concept of fairness does run through the culture here, and I absolutely love that. I think when you look at one of the tourists who were over was spent a night in prison while she was pregnant and was fined $25. I think that crosses the line for me.
And, or she was only charged $25?
No, that she spent a night in prison.
She shouldn't have spent a night in prison?
And for I think it was stealing a can of fizzy drinks, something like that.
Right. So they'd acquired a sort of reputation that made us over-punish them.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there are no easy... I don't think there are easy answers. I don't think it's simple. A group of people came over to New Zealand, behaved very badly, but also suffered. Suffered particularly, I think, through the way in which the media and wider population picked up on it. And in terms of overthinking... I mean, I've never underestimated the power of thought and thinking one's way through these things. But, and to some extent, one has to do that. For example, we have advisors on the unruly tourists who are advising us culturally with respect to holding te ao Māori and how that perspective is revealed in the work. We also have a consultant advising us on the traveller community from the UK, so that we hold that as well.
Were they travellers in that particularly English way of meaning travellers, which is a polite way of saying what used to be called gypsies, isn't it?
Yes, I mean they are. Yes, and they fuck a proper back to a different line than the gypsy line. Actually, funnily enough.
All right. So you've got people advising you on the respectful way to deal with the travellers?
Yes, absolutely. That's very important that everybody in the work is represented, at least fairly.
It sounds a fascinating social and indeed anthropological exercise, but as Witi Ihimaira might say, is it opera?
Well, it's it contains music and text, character, stage action, a combination of all those elements. So I think it is opera.
In as much as Gilbert and Sullivan was opera.
Yes, and also, of course, satirical.
Right.
One of the things that excites me actually is what Livy Rehana and Amanda Kennedy, who are stand-up comics, and Luke D. Sommer, who's principally known for his work in musical theatre, what their response will be to this concept of opera and what it is.
Yeah. I mean, it might go in a completely different direction to the one that you envisaged, I suppose.
Yes, and that is always a risk with new work and what makes it so exciting. But I come back to the general point, and Witi, of course, was a long-serving member of the board, and also integral to the formation of the strategic agenda, and actually also on the program committee that exists to review all our proposals.
Well, look, he changed his mind. You want to attract audiences previously opera hesitant. Is this what you want to do?
Yeah, absolutely. And look, it's working. Ihitai Avea, Star Navigator, which is a work by Tim Finn. That we 47% of the audience that came to see that in Manukau was new to New Zealand opera. The production sold out, and 96% rated their experience as good or excellent.
Oh, well, that's good. At least they didn't just say, look, it was interesting. Good or excellent is good and excellent. Good and excellent to talk to you, Ngā Mihi, Thomas de Mallet Burgess, who is the head of New Zealand Opera.